Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why I'm not buying Ty Lue's advice to the Lakers about LeBron.
And I'm Colin Cowherd. Why not? I'll tell you why this will be a make-or-break season for Dak Prescott, a kid I love in Dallas. Speak for yourself starts now.
I think you meant to say Jason Garrett. Make-or-break season for Jason Garrett. Is that what you meant to say? All right.
No.
Hello and welcome. We're joined today by NBA champion Donte Jones and the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. Let's start in Georgia, where a brawl broke out yesterday at a youth basketball tournament with players fighting a referee who had called a technical foul against them. When other officials came to his aid, a melee ensued, and all of it was caught on video. The incident has provoked some strong reaction, including from our friend Doug Gottlieb, who tweeted, "What a disgrace. All these players should be barred from high school and AAU basketball immediately." Cowherd, you agree with Gottlieb?
No, I watched the video, and at the very beginning of it, these refs are paid to control environments. I go back and look at the very beginning of this. This ref is not controlling anything. This ref gets in, and it happens here in a couple seconds. What is that ref doing? What in God's name is that referee doing? Listen, I know these are not NBA refs, but I've refed college intramurals. When you go as a ref, you're supposed to be a judge, no emotion. The jury can have emotion, the prosecuting attorney, the defense attorney. These referees are out of control. Now, I don't like the actions of the players or the coaches, but your job as a ref is to have complete control and avoid this. They just threw gas on the flames.
I want to defend Doug Gottlieb a little bit. His comments yesterday over Twitter were before the full video came out.
Okay.
And before the full video came out, I was like 75% on the players, 25% on the referees. Looking at the full video, I'm at 51-49. I think the players, 51%, refs, 49%. If somebody wants to flip it the other way, I'm not going to. But to me as a ref, I'm never squaring up with a kid.
Oh, God,
ever.
No.
And so to me, what I always say is I never let someone else control my reaction or my actions. If Donte started cussing at me, that doesn't mean I have to cuss at him back. Right. And as a referee, when you're dealing with kids and they're super competitive and they're in this culture where everybody thinks that this AAU game, they have so little perspective, they think this AAU game is going to determine whether they make it to the NBA or not and whether they may be the second pick or the 15th pick, and I can't believe. And so the kids overreacted. And look, I did some additional research, and this team is a bit mouthy and was trying to get mouthy with the refs, but I put the adult ref should have been de-escalating the situation. No way in hell he should have been squaring up with a kid.
I'm in agreement with you on this one, because I think the coaches and the referees, the adults in the situations, had the responsibility to disseminate and to make sure that the kids were taken out of it and that they didn't overreact. Nowhere do I see a coach holding some of the kids back and stopping them from fighting with the refs. They're letting it go on. There are adults in the crowd. There's no parents. There's no coaches. Like, the refs are at fault here because they let a situation get out of control. But these are kids, and kids need guidance. They need to be held back from themselves at points in time.
Yes.
And do they deserve a punishment? A small one. But the refs, the coaches, and the adults in the gym should have stopped this from happening.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think a small punishment, like maybe suspend them for a tournament or two, but bar them from high school basketball, that's insane.
I mean,
we can't go that far.
I don't want to go as far as say small punishment, because even though they're kids, and even though, again, I'm giving half the blame to the officials, some of this is just criminal assault. When three or four people are beating up one person, that does cross a line.
Sure.
And so
like there.
Whatever team is sponsoring this team needs to walk away. And this team probably, to me, needs to be shut down for the summer, these kids.
I agree.
And if I was the high school coach of any of these kids, they would be in a meeting with me today having very long discussions about what they're going to do to make sure they don't bring any of this attitude to my high school team. Because they've put, let's say some of these guys are college prospects. They put the colleges in a tough position in terms of recruiting them. So I'm a little stiff for punishment. Now, look, does a referee absolutely need to be removed from officiating. Again, if you're going to square up with some kids and not be looking to de-escalate, regardless, and again, I know how disrespectful kids can be because we now have a popular culture that is very disrespectful to authority. And so it's much harder, I think, to officiate now than it was when we were kids or even when Dante or Jason were competing.
I mean, this can still be a teachable moment, Whitlock. I mean, we can look at the kids, see some context, like, do they have a history of this sort of thing? Has this team, you know, gotten in many fights before? I just lean on, these are 16, 17-year-old kids. You don't want to let one moment as a teenager, one ugly, bad moment, just totally ruin their future.
That's all it takes. Look, we're all old enough, or we should be old enough to remember, all it takes is one bad moment. Allen Iverson got in one bad moment at a bowling alley, a fight that escalated out of control and people got hurt. And so when three people jump on one person and start wailing them, if that guy gets hurt, people's lives have changed. Not the person that got hurt, his life has changed as well, but the kids that did that, their lives have changed. It seems like this referee, he went on to ref a game after this, ref the championship game, even though he was a little bruised and beat up. It seems like he's moving on rather than trying to escalate this with a criminal prosecution or whatever. But these kids are somewhat lucky because that's all it takes is one out-of-control incident and your whole life is changed.
Listen, there's a reason we have officials. Like, you can always make the excuse, well, these refs make $8 a game. Well, cops don't make a lot of money. But when you sign up to be a cop, you sign up to de-escalate violence, chaos, screaming. You walk into a domestic violence situation as a cop, I mean, cops will tell you those are nightmares for them because nobody's rational. You have to be the rational voice as an official. Your job right there is to literally communicate. Grab guys. Hey, let's get out. When a guy squares up, dude, I don't care if you make $8 an hour or $800 an hour, that official should never officiate again. That official's 40. I got kids.
Are we sure he's 40?
Well, 35, 40. Yeah, that's a grown-up.
If you feel threatened as an official, you should just walk off and just
thank you and
leave.
Thank
because you.
You
should never put your hands up. You should just walk off and leave and say, I'm not doing this because I don't want to put myself in a situation and put these children in a situation that we might not be able to come back from.
That's exactly the point. And so if you're an official, and let's say the kids are being verbally abusive, and it gets to the point where you walk away. Just walk. Hey, you guys are too out of control. There's too much disrespect. Let me walk away from officiating rather than, and even if the kid had bumped him, again, that's the eject. Walk away.
Child.
Don't square up. Don't escalate a situation the way that he did. And again, that's why I'm putting, when I first saw it, I was like, man, wow, these kids. Then when you see the entire thing, you just go, this ref here escalated a situation rather than de-escalate, and being the adult, it's the harsher burden is on him. Do we think that AAU basketball gets beat up a lot? And, so, you know, AAU hates it when you say AAU because this wasn't a licensed AAU event. But summer basketball has a terrible reputation. Do we think this is another black eye for summer basketball, AAU basketball, whatever?
I don't. I think there was a few years ago, there was a high school football game where a player, we may have it, the player went after the ref. I don't think that speaks to high school football. I think that speaks to really poor judgment from a player. I've been to a lot of AAU tournaments because my daughter was a basketball player. Coaches give their time, don't make any money. I mean, it's really, it's very important to local communities, small towns. I think AAU basketball activates kids to be better teammates, better people. I think it's great for small towns. I love the idea. Every small town in America you go to now, there's a basketball facility. I was in Utah this weekend. That's where all the cars are parked. That's where all the kids are playing. Well, what are they going to do in the summer? Going to get in trouble, goofing around? I mean, I love walking into a gym in the summer and there's 30 teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think it's part of America. I love it. It's not perfect. Hell, International Olympic Committee and FIFA are corrupt. An occasional fight in a basketball game I can live with.
What concerns me, and again, I don't think this speaks to summer basketball or AAU basketball, but it does speak to, and even the clip we showed with the football players that went after the ref, is sportsmanship is just going down. It's not a priority. Only winning matters. How you win, how you lose, doesn't matter anymore. And this team was struggling and losing and got into it with the refs. And again, I'm on the record. The refs were wrong for squaring up and escalating the situation. But I would love to see just more of an onus placed on sportsmanship, because that is really what sports is about. We've turned it into a competition to make it to the pros, but at its heart, it's supposed to teach you how to compete and win and lose with class
but
and dignity.
That's idealism.
But we got to get back to that.
Good point, though. I mean, this starts at home. You got to, like, I just started coaching my kids, 7 and 8 year old basketball. And listen, we know some of the refs, as you said, refs are out of control at that level. Okay, the parents are like, "What's going on?" yelling. And after the game, I make sure our team goes up to the referee, "Hey, good game, ref, thank you," and shakes the hand, just as he shakes the hand with the other team. And I think it starts at the early ages, because as you said, all these parents think, my kid's going to get a scholarship. My kid's going to the pros. He's got to win this game. It's win at all costs. And it gets kind of ugly. I think there's no question this is a black eye for youth sports, but they can get past this because, listen, they're going to have to. The camera phones aren't going away. Anytime there's an incident, it's going to go on every website, every newspaper's picking this up, and it looks like the worst thing in the world.
What you said, Zach, right there, starts with us as parents and teaching at home how to win, how to play, how to compete, and giving them the moral standards to go out, because sports is a microcosm of life, period, on how to react to adverse situations. Youth basketball has done amazing things for my life. There's some amazing people running tournaments, running teams for no money, trying to make a difference in young athletes' lives and giving them an opportunity to chase a dream and create goals for themselves, possibly get an education, set the tone for the rest of their life. And these tournaments like this give people opportunities to just do something with their lives and keep themselves off the streets. So is this a black eye for the basketball? No, because there's so many great tournaments run around the world, and this should not be a representation of what they're doing. But as parents, we're supposed to teach our kids how to play the individual sports that we have, how to react in these situations, how to compete, how to respect refs and coaches. That's our responsibility as parents. It's not for the tournaments to teach our children.
Again, and we'll end on this note, I think it says something about our culture and our lack of respect for authority. It's pervasive throughout everything. We want to confront and challenge it. If a ref makes the wrong call, it's because he's out to get us and it's some kind of conspiracy, and therefore I got to confront him. We got to give people more of benefit of the doubt, and we got to get back to a little bit more idealism, in my view, Colin, and really put an emphasis on sportsmanship and how you conduct yourself when you win or lose.
How do I know this didn't happen in the 70s, 80s, 90s? There just wasn't a phone. Like, when I watch that, I think, oh, that's been happening for 50 years.
I don't believe that. Having competed, there was more respect. There was like a line you didn't cross with refs. And again, go back to the football thing. I think in the football incident that we showed, the ref did nothing, although the players accused called him a word or whatever. But on this one, we see in the video on the basketball deal where the ref squares up and provokes some things. But I think most people, I'm very involved with my high school's Little League program, the whole program. And this is respect for authority is an issue in sports and just throughout our society. I don't think this was as pervasive as it is now. I don't think if you had camera phones back in the 70s and 80s, you'd see a lot of this.
Hi, I'm Alexi Lalas. I used to play soccer back in the 1900s for the US. Now you can find me talking about soccer this summer during the World Cup on Fox. Now through July 15th, you can get daily FIFA World Cup updates from me through your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, "Alexa, play the Fox Sports Flash Briefing," and you'll get the latest tournament news straight from Russia. Alexa and Alexi, now that's a winning team. Don't forget to watch the 2018 FIFA World Cup all tournament long live on Fox and FS1.
Welcome back. We're joined now by longtime NFL coach Rob Ryan and former Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada, who I covered in college. He doesn't remember. Let's move to Dallas, where the Cowboys are going to look to bounce back this year, but not everybody is ready to believe in them. Vegas odds makers actually are betting on Dallas to miss the playoffs. Dak Prescott now entering his pivotal third year under center. Jason Garrett entering his eighth as a head coach and has only made the playoffs twice. Whitlock, who's under more pressure, Dak or Garrett?
I'm going to say Jason Garrett. Dak Prescott, I think, because of his rookie year And because of the length of time Jason Garrett has been there, if they don't make the playoffs, someone has to say the common denominator in our lack of success in the postseason is Jason Garrett, not Dak Prescott. Jason Garrett has been here, what, 8 or 9 years? One of the longest tenured coaches, I think, in the NFL. At some point, you have to point the finger at him and not at the players. And so I think Jason Garrett's under more pressure.
I don't think either is under great pressure. I think Jason Garrett's been established as a good coach. Not Belichick. He's a good coach. Nobody thinks he's a bum. He's lasted a while. He's won some games.
No one thinks he's a bum.
Realistic fans.
He's done nothing in the postseason, Kyle.
Well, it's hard. You know, Bill Parcells struggled in the postseason. It's hard to win in the postseason. It's a hard place to win.
Marvin Lewis has struggled a little in the postseason.
And he's a very good coach.
Marvin Lewis has had all the support that the Cowboys have had.
Timeout.
And
Jerry,
Bill Parcells got 2 Super Bowl rings, but he struggled in the postseason.
So my point is, I don't think either one's under enormous pressure. I will say this. I love Dak. I really do. I've been on Dak. But
Dak and Doug.
No Jason Witten, no Dez.
You're on to it.
And you get to a third year, and guys like me and fans, you got to be a grown-up by year 3.
Yeah.
We'll give you a pass your rookie year. Second year, year 3 for a quarterback is like, okay, you got to be 29 touchdowns, 5 picks. Like, that's what I want now for my guy. So I do think there's some fan pressure on, okay, Dak, no Dez, no Witten, it's your team, you're a star, you're going to get some money. So I think there's a little pressure on Dak Prescott.
Can I say this? I know I was in Dallas for a couple years. I think the pressure on the players in Dallas is more than anywhere else that I coach. And I coach at 8 different spots. I really believe that. I think, you know, when you win a game, oh, man, you know, you're going to the Super Bowl. When you lose, oh, you're terrible. You're going to get fired as coaches. I kind of see that. That's the way it is in the coaching world. But as these players, I've seen players where the pressure just gets too much on them in Dallas, and they do need a change of scenery. Look, here's the thing I worry about. I love Dak Prescott same way you do. He was recruiting my son at Mississippi State. Great person. Does the second half of the year bother you like it does me? He threw only 6 touchdown passes, was almost dead last in interceptions over the last half of the year, almost dead last on losing fumbles the last half of the year. That's the concerning thing to me. Look, and then you take away a great Dez Bryant. Look, you take away a great receiver, and I know everybody doesn't like Dez.
The great Dez Bryant got taken away like 5 years ago.
Well, I'm just saying, look, I know one thing. Dez Bryant can compete, and everybody wants to say, well, you blame him, he wasn't so good. Okay, I get it. Okay, maybe he wasn't that great. But I know Dez Bryant, and I know the way he works. I know the way defenses lean to him. It's going to make things more difficult without him than putting some guy, Hearns or whoever this guy is, you know, that they bring in to replace him. He's not going to be as good as Dez. Trust me, he's not going to be.
When a guy's making $630,000, zero pressure on him.
I like that.
Dak has no pressure on him at all. He's not making enough money to have pressure on him, number one. Number two, is a 4th-round pick. So by the words of the media, he's automatically now, he's overachieved his whole career thus far. He wasn't even supposed to start and perform the way he did as a rookie. So it's absolutely no pressure. What he's saying, people don't realize, you say, oh, Dez Bryant this. When Dez Bryant, you know, for the most part, they're going to cloud that side. I mean, they're going to put a safety over the top, so there's no run support to his side. There's going to be more 8 in the box with Dez Bryant not there. More 8 in the box. They're not going to be able to run the ball as effective, regardless of how good their offensive line is. So now, who is Dak Prescott going to go to when they need a 3rd and 6? Coeasy? Or Beasley. Which one? So that's going to be the problem, is who's going to be that guy? And coaching is going to come into play big time offensively. How are they going to design plays to get Dak easy passes, easy completions, get him on the road and make him feel a little comfortable to start the game? That's going to be the key. But who has the more pressure? By far, Jason Garrett. No comparison.
The only thing is, and those are outstanding points, the only thing is, you know, Jason has had this pressure before. But, look, not many coaches get to change their staffs, internal staffs, one time. Okay, he's done that once. All right, when we went from 31st to 13th in defense when I was fired, you know, I was part of it. And his brother was fired, all right, with about 8 other coaches. They've done it again this year. They fired the receiver coach. Fire the longtime quarterback coach, Wade Wilson. Fire the offensive line coach. He's been able to do that, which is strange. So I think Jerry loves him. I think they have a great relationship. I think Jason's an excellent coach. But the only thing is, you know, he's got at least a couple years with this new staff. And I agree. The thing that's tough is, where's this kid's confidence going if he struggles early in the year again? Because, look, eventually it's going to come out that he only threw 6 touchdown passes in the last half of the season. Like, you can only keep that a secret so long and bury that so deep.
It's going to be tough for him. The Giants are going to be better. The Eagles are going to be better.
Yeah.
And the Redskins are going to be better. That's going to be a problem in the NFC.
NFC, literally now, if Josh Rosen looks to be ahead of schedule, like he's really good, there's not a single easy Sunday in the NFC. AFC gives you about 6 weeks. I mean, Buffalo doesn't know what the quarterback is. NFC, man.
Got to go.
It's tough.
All right, welcome back to the show. Dante Jones and Jason McIntyre are back. Let's move to L.A., where as far as we know, LeBron still hasn't reached out to Coach Luke Walton, so it's probably a good thing Walton reportedly met with this morning with LeBron's old coach, Ty Lue, to get some advice. But when asked over the weekend what he would tell Walton, Lue actually said that despite LeBron's history of multiple coaches, coaching the world's best player isn't all that tough. Explaining, quote, "I'll just tell them LeBron's easy. People get this whole thing built up like he's hard to coach. It's not. LeBron's not the problem. It's the outside tension that's the problem." Cowherd, you buying this? Yeah. LeBron's easy?
Yeah. Ty Lue is 1-12 without him. He's won 66% of his games with him. Listen.
Easy to coach?
Superstar players all have a little of this. I mean, it's a player's league. But you know what LeBron brings? He cares. You've said this. There's guys in this league that are there for the check. There's guys that don't play defense. There's guys that just, you know what I mean? What can basketball do for me? LeBron cares.
Easy?
Well, what is easy? You know what's easy? I show up as a coach and I know you care as much as I care. I'll sign up for that every time.
That's one way to define it. I'm going to let Dante jump in here. I see he's itching to pull the trigger. But there are some players who are less passive-aggressive, Colin.
LeBron, like, as Luke gave an exact testament of how he really feels to the media. Like, sometimes people don't tell exactly what they're going through and how they view it just for PR perspective. But the hardest part with LeBron was the media, was attention, was everything else other people said. LeBron does a good job of doing his homework. He's a leader. He leads by example, and he leads by speaking and doing all the right things. So it's not hard to coach him. He's a brilliant basketball player. Like, there hasn't been that many players that sees the game like he does, and there hasn't been the players that care as much he does to do their homework and to try and piece things together.
Easy?
Easy. Nothing in life is easy. Coaching, being a head coach is one of the hardest things that I've been around, because you have to fit all these personalities together and have them come together for one common cause.
Well, what's
with so much money on the line.
What's the value of easy? Kobe wasn't easy. Well, what's the value of easy? I've never met anybody in anything that's great that's easy. I think life's not easy.
Phil Jackson might say Michael Jordan was easy to coach. He might.
Jordan didn't win anything until Phil Jackson got there, though. Well, we'll give him that. But let me go back to his answer. Very political of him, is it not? Okay, a lot of coaches would go out and burn bridges. LeBron left me, dang it, and they would sound off. Dan Gilbert famously did that with the letter. But this is a great answer from Ty Lue, because he's essentially saying, well, geez, I could end up coaching LeBron again. I played for the Lakers. I could be there one day. Maybe LeBron comes home again. But when you go to easy, answer me this, Dante. When the Cavs win, who gets all the credit? LeBron James. When the Cavs lose, who gets the blame?
Everybody.
J.R. Smith.
No, everybody
coach,
else.
Kevin Love. Anybody
fans,
but LeBron. So,
fans.
In a way, you can't win coaching LeBron. I think this is a great political answer from Tyler.
Coach would tell you the same thing. Players get all the credit when we win, and we take all the flack when we lose. That's just the job of a coach. That's what you get paid to do as a coach.
Right.
So, LeBron being easy is the fact that he thinks the game. The best coaches I've been around, they give you an option to show what you see. It's the dynamic of you do what I say is done in coaching. It's not the most effective way to communicate on any level of trying to get people to do something for a common cause.
What if I said LeBron's challenging. I mean, Magic got a coach fired.
I agree, it's not easy. Now you're right. Onto something that's true. Challenging.
No, yeah. But I mean, I think it's challenging because LeBron demands you have to figure out the puzzle. And LeBron's like, listen, I'm a Swiss Army knife. I can rebound, I can pass, I can score. You got to figure out how to get guys around me who probably aren't as talented, aren't as passionate, don't have the basketball IQ LeBron, Magic, Jordan do. Like, yeah, I think it's challenging to deal with, by the way, Terry Bradshaw, Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman barked at teammates on the sidelines in blowout wins. Was Troy Aikman easy? No, but I'd take that challenge every day.
Yeah, I would say Troy Aikman easier to coach than LeBron. I'd say Karl Malone, John Stockton easier to coach than LeBron. And there is a benefit to a challenge. It can take you to a higher level. And so, again, just because I'm saying it's not easy doesn't mean LeBron doesn't elevate the coach and the team by challenging them. But I think Eric Spoelstra, if asked, would have probably gone to challenging and rewarding coaching LeBron. I don't think he would have gone to easy coaching LeBron.
Where would David Blatt have gone? Would he have gone easy?
No.
Would David Blatt have gone? I mean, LeBron is difficult to coach. Mike Brown was coaching LeBron, okay? They struggled. They won 60 games. They got bounced. Do you think LeBron got any of the blame?
Let's just say this, the basketball culture. So Greg Popovich is the Belichick of the NBA. He's about ready to go. He's 69. Brad Stevens looks like he's the heir apparent. Well, he's the best coach in the league. It's hard to coach basketball. It's hard to get a 6-year run as an NBA. People for years said Stan Van Gundy was a good coach. How many jobs has he had? Jeff can't get back in. Basketball's culture is worship the star. From AAU to college.
American culture is.
I can understand why he said easy. Because for coaching, most of their job is motivating players to do their job. Like, you're trying to convince this guy how he has to play hard, how he has to do this, why he has to do this. With him, he's self-motivated. He holds his teammates to a standard of excellence that you don't have to do it with them. He's holding them. He's controlling the tempo of the team. He's such a perfectionist that the team is already
he's
in line.
All you have to do is coach
the team and give the schemes. The coach doesn't necessarily want to do all the motivating because that's the tiring part of coaching. You shouldn't have to motivate these guys who are paid an extremely amount of money to do something that you're supposed to love to do. That shouldn't be your job as a coach. But when you have LeBron James on your team, everyone falls in line and everyone understands how dominant and he shows them how to work. He shows them how to prepare. He takes all that off your burden of being a coach.
I like that. Houston, where the Rockets may have missed out on signing LeBron this offseason. That doesn't mean a banana boat reunion's out of the question. Oh, boy. Reportedly, Chris Paul's pushing for the team to sign Melo, who is expected to part ways with OKC this summer. Whitlock, you think Chris Paul wants to team up with Melo, really?
No, I think this is a friend doing a friend a solid. I think that he's putting on a public air of, hey, I'd like to work with Carmelo. That's how you should support a friend. Do I think he's in there beating on a table in Houston? Daryl Morey, we got to sign Carmelo, I don't think he is because I think everybody would look at him like, come on, man. We seen the tape. We need another ball stopper, a guy that won't play at the defensive end. How does he help us win a championship? I think Chris Paul is being good to a friend here. Do I really, really think he wants to play with Melo? No.
By the way, Chris Paul and LeBron have had opportunities to play with Melo, and they never end up playing with Melo. We've all met guys. We've all got one of these guys in our social circle. We don't want to admit it. We'll never tell you who it is. But you run into that guy every year, restaurant, game, bar, and you're like, boo, bro, we got to hook up more. I can't believe I haven't called you. God, I got your number. Man, next time, hey, we got to hook up. And you never call them. And when they're in the room, they're your buddy. But when they're not in the room, you're like, eh. And I got 6-7 guys on my phone, so do you. Even on a day off, you never initiate contact. I've been hearing Melo's a great teammate for 10 years, Jason. And all these guys don't ever end up playing with him. They end up playing with Chris Paul, LeBron, people that want to play with D-Wade.
Westbrook, they end up playing with Westbrook.
Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, Paul George had a choice. I've been hearing for 10 years everybody wants to play with Melo.
I think Melo is misunderstood in the respect that we see his talent and we think that he is supposed to be the leader of all his teams. That's not how he operates. And his best years have been when he's had a point guard that was an extreme leader and that was vocal and that set the tone for the team with Jason Kidd and Chauncey Billups. They were the leaders. They did all those other things that he could not do and didn't concentrate on. He's one of the best scorers we've seen, and that's what he does. So just because he can score doesn't mean he can lead a team to a championship. That's why, that's where we get into LeBron James category, because he does the scoring. He sets the tone for people. He does leading. That's what makes him great. But Melo is fine with being just a scorer in the light that KD is.
Chris Paul wants him.
But Chris Paul wants him because he understands him. He understands that that's what Melo does. See, when you put too much responsibility on Melo, then that's where it gets a little shaky and a little gray. But when you let him just be him, score, not have to be the leader or the front man for the team,
not play defense, not move without the ball. When you let him do all those things, he's great.
When you do, his talent shines better. He shines better. He's a specialist. He's not a complete basketball player in some of the...
He wants all the money, James Harden. But he doesn't want to do anything except shoot the basketball.
He wants market value for his skill set.
Kyle Korver.
He gets market value for his skill set.
So overrated. Dante, I think Jason's right on this. He's doing his buddy a solid because there's no way Chris Paul wants Melo in New York. I'm sorry, in Houston. You know what the Houston coach is, right? Mike D'Antoni. Do you remember D'Antoni and Carmelo in New York?
Nightmare.
I mean, it was awful. Carmelo reportedly went to the team and said, it's me or D'Antoni. And D'Antoni alleges that he quit. So there's no way it's happening in Houston. And then let's go down the list. If it's not happening in Houston, is it happening in L.A.?
No.
Okay. Boston? You think Brad Stevens wants Carmelo in there? I don't think so.
I bet you.
So you're left with what?
LA
Philadelphia?
Will not turn Carmelo.
The
down.
Lakers?
I bet you they won't turn him up. If the money works, they won't turn his talent down.
What is he worth? A minimum?
By the way, if you bring Melo to LA.
If you bring Melo in a minimum, you got to have a contract.
Golden State can do that.
Melo to LA. So now you're at. So where's Kuzma play now? His growth. Ingram, his growth.
We don't even know. We don't know how long they have on that roster.
JaVale McGee.
We don't. Carmelo, we don't.
There's no way that's happening.
We know the Lakers.
How they do this for me. Honest to goodness, and you've done a great job representing his side. But what is his skill at this point? What does he do at this point?
At this point in time, Melo, if you put Melo in the situation where he gets to pick where he goes, he has to adjust to what the team needs. So he's going into the situation knowing exactly what they want.
What does he do well right now?
He stretches the floor. And he
with
could,
what?
With his shooting.
He shot 24% in the first round of the playoffs.
With his shooting. In a seven-game capsule, you're going to judge a man on a seven-game capsule?
We could judge him by the body of work.
If I judge you on a seven-day capsule, it wouldn't be a fair representation of what you do. So on a seven-game capsule, he shot 24%. He can stretch the floor. And if you put him in certain situations, he can still score at a high level on an ISO basis. But right now, he's a stretch four.
He's been a pro for 15 years.
And he's been an all-star, and he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He will be
a
Hall of Famer.
Career.
But at this stage, you're telling me you think somebody's taking a chance on him?
I think Melo can play at a high level and play on a winning team if you put him in the right role with the right coaching. It's all about the right situation.
As long as he's starting, he doesn't want to come off the bench.
He won't come off the bench.
Right. So he's got to start.
He may not come off the bench for OKC. He may come off the bench for Houston. He never said that. He didn't say, I'll never come off the bench. I'm just not coming off the bench for you, Billy Donovan, possibly. Possibly that was the situation.
Are you wearing a Knicks jersey under that? Just be honest.
I'm not a Knicks fan, but I understand how the right situation can help enhance a player's skill set. Right situation and the people that you play with. It's like working. You may not, if you can work with the people that you respect, yeah, and it'll be cool, but if you work with people that you are friends with and have a genuine connection, it's a different type of situation.
I think I agree with you if it were 2012. But in 2018,
I just don't think
he's taking care of himself. I think he's fine not playing any defense at all. I just don't think he shoots that well anymore. That's the issue.
All right, welcome back. J-Mac is here. Let's talk UFC. Light heavyweight champ Daniel Cormier, our buddy, knocked out Saturday night to take home the heavyweight title, becoming just the second fighter in UFC history to hold two belts. Even still, all anybody was talking about afterwards was the post-fight theatrics between Cormier and his likely next challenger.
But Brock Lesnar, get your ass in here! Push me now, you go to sleep later!
Whitlock, you excited about a potential battle between those two?
They've got me slightly interested with their post-fight theatrics here. But Brock Lesnar's been disgraced as a PED user. He's a wrestler. I'm not that excited about it. Now, the shove, and I don't think Daniel was expecting that, particularly not that violent of a shove. And so maybe over time they can get me there. But right now I'm more into what Cormier has accomplished, holding two belts, first to do that since Conor McGregor, only the second guy to do it. You know, I'm not sure if he needs the shtick of Brock Lesnar to elevate himself, but
he doesn't, the sport does. That was totally choreographed, and I love it. Dana White is never going to admit this, but I was right. When McGregor was done, I said, you're out of stars. You got to become pro wrestling. You got to go get some bad guys from the NFL. You got to become more wrestling, WWE. And this is what I said. They got a problem at UFC. They're out of stars. Rousey's gone. John Jones can't stay clean. Cormier's great, but not dynamic for the fans. Brock Lesnar's old. That's choreographed, and it's brilliant. By the way, the Conor, we all watched Conor McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah.
90% of that was choreographed. The fight wasn't, but
yeah,
but up to it. Okay. When I'm watching that, Dana White finally is taking the advice, which is, listen, man, boxing, pro wrestling, and UFC are as popular as their stars and their storylines. They need a storyline. This, I mean, he invited him up.
Yeah.
And by the way, when the big guy, Brock, comes up, he's smiling. They're putting on a little post-fight show. It's brilliant. It's going to sell tickets. I'm going to watch. I'd watch it.
How did they know Cormier was even going to beat Miocic to do this? Because that was shocking. He took him out in the first round.
Is it possible when Cormier won, somebody said in his ear, hey, invite Lesnar up.
Gotcha.
Cormier's a company guy. He's all in on UFC.
And Cormier, great guy. We see him in the halls here all the time at Fox. Very nice guy. I will say this. It feels a little scripted and hokey to the point that UFC fans, and I've got some friends, were texting me about this saying, Jason, this just doesn't feel UFC. We haven't had to resort to this. This is wrestling, fake, theatric type stuff. And I get this sense that going the WWE route may win over the casual fans, but I don't know if the hardcore fans are going to be like, Do we need this? Do we want this? It just doesn't feel authentic. And you know one of the big things on TV, be authentic. Keep it 100%, as you like to say.
Listen, if we go all the way back to the origins of UFC, and Chuck Liddell was their first big star.
Yeah. Right.
He and Tito Ortiz, this is what they did.
Yes.
They did a lot of things to get attention, and people, it feels WWE. And so maybe what Dana White is just doing is he's circling back to what made him great in the first place.
By the way, remember, this is two different sports. There was the sport that the Fertittas bought for $12 million. Now there's the sport that IMG spent $4 billion on, or whatever they spent it on. You got bills to pay. You got banknotes. Okay, you can be an idealist and be worried about being authentic, or you can ramp up your pay-per-view numbers by having a little fun and doing a little theater. This is the way to do it. By the way, let's not get too pious. We just had two different networks. Fox and ESPN were both interested in wrestling. 15 years ago, were Fox and ESPN both interested in televising wrestling? The world's changed. We live in a world with a million channels. Dana White's like, let's have a little fun.
But at the same time, Colin, we're hyping up a match between a 39-year-old guy and a 40-year-old guy.
Will you watch it?
Well, hold on. Let me finish. Cormier's 5'11", like 246. Brock Lesnar's 6'3", 285. This is like a safety in football fighting a defensive end. Like, at some point, people are going to be like, is this fight going to be that good? Brock Lesnar, as you said, multiple-time cheater via PEDs against a guy who's much smaller and likable.
Who's not going to watch that?
Hold on.
I'm watching it.
I mean, I'm into it. I will watch it. But
look, that you're describing a little David versus Goliath.
There is
good versus evil.
Thank you. Yes.
Good versus evil. Now, where I agree with you is this is a grudge match, or the 39, 40-year-old guy.
Yes.
And what Dana and the UFC and UFC fans have to look, we have to turn to a nearly 40-year-old. Where's our youth? Where's our young superstar?
That is a real question, But in the process of finding it, we got bills to pay. And Brock Lesnar, I mean, I'd watch this fight. Again, you can listen, man, baseball has lost its regular season. Most of us don't sit and watch games. Why? Well, we're baseball. We don't need to market our stars. Yeah, you do. More kids need to know who Manny Machado is and Mike Trout. If you get too stubborn and too rigid, and I'm not going to sell, and I'm not going to be theatrical, and okay, because the NFL and the NBA, I mean, does the NBA market its stars or what?
They do.
They do, and it works.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to LeBron James, who hasn't had the warmest welcome since joining the Lakers, with a mural of the King being vandalized after a fan offered money on Twitter to anyone who defaced it. Cowherd, should LeBron be worried Laker fans won't embrace him?
No, because this is a small number of people, idiots. Most Laker fans are going to give him a wild standing ovation.
I think this will be interesting because I think there won't be 1,000% worship of LeBron like he had in Cleveland. There will be some Kobe fans, Kobe stans. We got one that works on our show that won't let Kobe go and will take little pot shots at LeBron. All right, to one of LeBron's new Lakers teammates, Lonzo Ball, who added even more ink to what is now a massive forearm tattoo, despite the fact his father, LeVar, is on record as hating tattoos. Cowherd, do you like Lonzo's new ink?
You know, it's okay. I'm like the sleeve thing. I'm fine. It doesn't detract from the game. It doesn't add to it. I'm ambivalent about ink.
I love all these macho basketball players that all keeping it real, and they're all just sheep and do what everybody else is doing. You can't play in the NBA unless you have tats all over your arms. And they all just come in and do it.
If I got a sleeve tomorrow, what would you do?
I'd laugh my ass off.